You're listening to WCOM LP Chapel Hill and Carborough 103.5 FM on whatever kind of device you use to get the best in radio. Freedom of expression is essential to a free society. And welcome all to Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater, bringing Carolina coast to coast and the speakeasy right to your doorstep. And you can just come as you are. You can roll out of bed and just, you know.
Naked, barefoot, we don't mind.
Because we're all here. Your host, Claudio Renaissance Man and Bard of WCOM, has opened the doors of the speakeasy to invite you all to come, as I said, come as you are, find a seat, get comfortable in the place where you're always welcome and can always expect the very best.
And here we be, where in the land where Congress has dropped its pants and is shaking its wiener at us. Boy, the metaphor has come full circle. Just thought I'd open up with that. It's been on my mind.
Thank you.
It's been on everybody's mind. It's on all the talk shows.
I'm sorry. It's not on my mind at all.
Well, it is now.
Thanks a lot.
Welcome back. I hear your garden grows rather well.
Oh, this morning I got so excited. I went out to water these very demanding tomato plants.
Which you got? You bought tomatoes in a box or whatever?
Well, I bought an earth box thing, and I've got two tomato plants in there that have turned into a jungle and require, just in that one box for two plants, 3 gallons of water.
That's unthinkable. No wonder this thing is. Water's got no place to go except up.
Yes, exactly. But as I was doing that this morning, watering them, the first blush of red coming up on one of the tomatoes. And I got so excited because it's got, you know, all these green tomatoes getting to different sizes all over the place, which is, you know, making my mouth water.
But, be able to reach outside your door and start your salad.
There it is. It was so beautiful. And you know, I've grown plants in the past, but it's a wonder and a glory to me every time. I just love it.
For anyone living in apartments or not quite out in the country, this is a good way to cultivate a little something
for yourself. Absolutely. I've got basil and tarragon, and I've got parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme.
All right. What about Simon and Garfunkel? Did you get them?
No, darn.
Maybe you should play them Simon and Garfunkel music. Maybe that'll grow.
Well,
who knows? You
know, I'm afraid they're just going to overtake the house and come down over the front door.
They say that classical music, some people actually play classical music for their plants, and it supposedly enhances something. So,
and talking to the plants, I suppose, there's something, you know, whether it's a carbon dioxide, monoxide, whatever, it comes out of your
just breath. Don't let anybody see you. It's okay.
Well, I do, you know, just sit out there. By now, it's a jungle. I can hide in there.
Perfect. And I actually live in a jungle behind bamboo.
Yes. Yeah.
John Paul got me started years ago with some bamboo from their property, from him and Sharon's property. And that stuff has taken over to the point where I have to cut it back now. But I wanted a jungle, so it's closing me in.
Okay.
So today we've got an interesting little event coming up. We're going to be interviewing an author by the name of Robert Banks Hull. And if you think Hull indicates anything maritime, you're right, because he's written a couple of books that go in the maritime direction. One is called The Street Fighter Conspiracy, and the other is The Angel Island Conspiracy. We have some conspiracies going on here, and he's going to be calling in at about 10:10. In the meantime, I want to go ahead and acknowledge the Historic Carolina Theater that is shutting down pretty soon. They've still got a few shows coming up, but they're shutting down pretty soon for that million-dollar renovation. As a matter of fact, maybe well underway, because I think they took the goods down yesterday. So it's a call I declined because I was out of town. But so they're
took
doing
the goods down.
That means the curtains and all the heavy hanging things for that would gather too much construction dust.
Okay.
So that happened yesterday, I do believe. Oh, and so they may well be underway with that the process of renovating that theater from carpet to walls to I think even on the sound system something's being done. But check out their website, and I know that at some point when they open back up again, they're going to be inviting people to make comment on how they feel about the new look, and they do already have pictures in the lobby of what it's going to look like.
Nice.
So that's a progress underway.
Something that's going on there, and you've got something else coming up in July.
Yes, well, I've decided I've got to reinvent myself now that now that the Carolina Theater is shut down for a while and there's no work there. I'm trying to make a go of it with my artistic endeavor once again.
Uh-huh. And it's Summer Tales and Other Delights is the working title. But you're
it's going to be an art and performance event.
Art and performance event. And so it's going to be down in, you're going to be on Broadway.
In Broadway, exactly, my own hometown now, at, yes. And it's going to be at BMF Tool and Die, and which is the bluegrass gentleman we had on, Ronnie Brown. It's his business, essentially. Half of it's a tool and die shop, and the other half is a major performance space. It can seat about 50 or more, and has a little staging area and all that, and it's been going on that way for a decade or more. They jam every Monday night, and they've got a built-in audience that comes along with everything, so we're going to make use of that and promote and sell some of my art and have me do some storytelling with Ronnie as my backup and
some
other musicians coming up on July 23rd.
Saturday from 1 to 8 p.m. And you want to get more information about it, anybody out there, go to claudioarts.com.
And you can also go to Facebook and like the Apex Arts Council and then go to events and you'll find it there as well. Bob Crowley has already put it up there, so. Yeah, thanks for that plug.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun, and as I said, I might actually make it this time.
Good. I might remind you.
Yes. Yeah. Might.
So anyway, the Historic Carolina Theater is in full swing for renovations. Keep that in mind. And, of course, I want to thank them for being our primary sponsor, underwriter here at Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater. Going back to Robert Banks Hull and his books we're going to be discussing. I think he's calling in. Where is he calling in from? Is it Texas or Florida?
Calling in from Florida.
I think that's what I remembered as well. But I know he lives in or lived in Texas as well.
Now I guess we'd give him a little bit of information from the back of the book about Robert or Bob. He is a naval architect and former licensed captain. He's been involved in sailing his entire life. Worked with several prestigious yacht design firms and boat builders, including Sparkman and Stevens in New York and Hunter Marine in Florida. And didn't you say Captain
I think Captain Don had some doings with Hunter Marine himself because he both repaired and built boats.
And then he opened his own design firm in Florida in 1988. Oh, okay. He now resides in Houston, Texas. So I guess he's probably calling him from Texas. So,
which is actually where my friend Clay McClinton, son of Delbert, called us from. What is it about Texas? Everybody goes to Texas. They go to Texas and write books about the ocean. They couldn't be further away from it.
Well, they've got the Gulf, right?
Yeah, right. Now, let's see here. Now, I'm trying to remember which one of the books he wrote first. I think the
first one was The Angel Conspiracy.
The Angel Island Conspiracy. Right. Okay, yeah. That's when he was living in Florida.
Well, I think he must have been living in San Francisco then, because this is out there on the West Coast.
Well, he talks about having his own design firm in Florida in 1988, of course.
Right.
But now he's in Houston, Texas.
But at least he's, I don't know. We'll have to ask him, did he live in San Francisco? Because that's the...
He certainly has a fascination for the San Francisco Bay Area.
Right.
Yeah.
And a great familiarity with it. So he'll be calling in about 2 minutes.
He'll be calling in any minute. And if for some reason he doesn't, or like we had that moment with Jen where she actually completely forgot about needing to call in that day on the radio show. And we just sort of made it a... Jen Chapin Music Morning, but she will actually be on with us next week. She's doing an interview with us next week. So.
Okay.
She'll be heading our way. Otherwise, I'm going to call her at home and remind her, hey, kid, get on the phone.
So we've had all sorts of things going on here besides your bamboo and my tomatoes.
Yes. Actually, my bamboo might help your tomatoes grow.
Well, they could twist some up of them. On yes, it exactly. as stalks because I think I'm going to need something.
Got a lot of interesting comments in from relating to the people we had on last week's show that were Rusty Bucket Kids. We had John Demers and his daughter Roxana, Greg Brand. I want to say Brandywin, but it's actually Brandwin.
We had good response from Michigan.
Germany.
Right.
I think an email from India again. I have no idea what this Germany-India connection is. But also Canada, Ontario, Canada.
And we might have somebody we're getting a call. Here.
This might be our author.
Good morning. This is WCOM. Is this Bob?
Yes. Is this Audrey Layden?
Yes, it is. So happy
Hi,
to
Audrey.
Have you here.
Oh, well, it's a pleasure, and thanks for the opportunity. I hope you can hear me all right.
Yes, we can hear you just fine. This is Claudio.
Oh, okay, Claudio, yeah. I'm calling from a military boat conference in Virginia Beach, and I'm calling on my cell phone, and I try to find the quietest place possible to talk.
Well, actually, I'm amazed that we've got this good a reception on a cell phone. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this is good. Okay, well, I'm ready, and I hope I called at the right time.
you called just fine. We've done all our promos.
We were just talking about the conspiracy theme in both your books, mm-hmm. You know, and you've got them called the conspiracy novels.
And obviously a bit of a fascination with the San Francisco Bay Area, and of course my intrigue with you is that you're a sailor. I'm a seaman myself. So.
Oh, great.
I was
there. The second book takes place in St. Augustine, Florida, where I spent a few years when I was designing boats there, and also in the Gulf Coast, Mississippi, Alabama Gulf Coast.
Right.
Both beautiful places. So I take those places, and I weave a situation with my people. I say my people because they're now Trav and Carol and the villain, Bad Al Kemp, and then I weave them around basically the 1980s.
I was wondering what the intrigue was with that particular time era.
Yeah, I get that question asked a lot, Claudia. That's a question for me. It's a simple time. No cell phones. Cell phone just coming up, but no real connection with electronics. A much more real world for everybody at that time, and it is the time when I'm the most familiar with those places. And as I've been doing San Francisco in the 80s, I find there are people in the San Francisco Bay Area that really like the nostalgia about certain on-water places, restaurants, and so on.
I can appreciate that, yeah.
Yeah, they're not in business anymore. And so they say, oh, yeah, what about Tiburon Tommy's and places like that that I write about? So it's come off pretty well.
Did you live out in the you must have lived out in the San Francisco Bay Area for a while to be so familiar with it all.
Oh, yes. Well, I was born and raised in the San Francisco Bay Area. And,
oh, goodness. Okay.
Yeah, I started sailing there in the Yacht Club Junior programs, sailing dinghies, and then moved on up from there to displacement boats and ocean racing boats and so on, but spent just about all my life sailing.
So you know all about that Mark Twain line, the coldest winter I ever spent was a summer in San Francisco?
Yeah, it's very appropriate in the summertime. Yeah, everybody I talked to said, boy, I went out there in July, and my God, the fog was rolling in the gate at a real clip, and it was cold, and I had to wear jackets, you know, and my goodness, you know, in the middle of the summer,
mm-hmm.
the way it is.
Actually, it sounds like perfect weather for me. I'm half German, half Italian, and I tend to have hot blood no matter what. So I like the colder climates.
Yeah, but as I write in the first book, San Francisco Bay Area has a wonderful what they call an Indian summer. After the summer winds go away, after the Central Valley cools down, the winds stop rushing through the gate and dragging all the fog with it. And there are actually some very pleasant, light wind, very sunny days on the bay in the fall. It's just great.
Sounds beautiful.
Ah.
Well, you've got some colorful characters in your book. I mean, Travis and Carol and Travis's ex-wife. And
Which one would you like us to pick on first? Let's go ahead and touch on both of them a little bit.
Or all of them. Are these your friends?
They're friends in the mind. I mean, they're composites, of course, of people that
sure.
I've known.
Right.
Carol was supposed to be kind of a mate to Travis in the beginning.
Yeah,
and
she was
Carol,
just a buddy in the beginning, wasn't she?
In
Angel Conspiracy, they were just seemed like they were more friends and close mates than anything else.
They had been high school sweethearts, and mm-hmm. then he got carried away with another girl and went another way. But they were always sailors together. They always raced and everything on the bay. And what she becomes is she's a real athletic type. And
mm-hmm.
Travis is kind of lazy and doesn't, you know, he's abhors exercise. And she is became more of the physical hero in the book quite by accident. But I became so taken with Carol and in her abilities to do things. And I've known, you know, women sailors like this, and I admired her for her, so I just kept writing her more and more into the action scenes, I guess.
I've known some pretty amazing female sailors. I mean, I think in some cases they could outdo the men.
Yeah, yeah.
It's also interesting about how characters take over their own, take control of the story themselves. So in a way, you know, Carol is taking more of a space than you had intended for her. She becomes alive.
That's the way it turns out. I know you were going to want to quiz me about my writing style, or you know how I come about the writing process.
Almost seems like you're keeping a bit of a diary, if you don't mind me imposing here for a second. The referring to the writing style. It's almost you had a term for it earlier, Audrey.
I don't remember.
Cross between cross between a diary and a travelogue.
The travelogue, yeah. Right?
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I think I'm very influenced by film, and I'm very influenced by screenwriters.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the way that they move the story along. And but of course, you know, when you're writing, you know, you can't let the scenes speak for themselves. You know, you have to be descriptive. You have to be descriptive of the situations and things like that. So I mean, you know, you do have to remain true to writing, but I like to keep them moving along. They're kind of like novellas. They're not real long books, but my friends and associates like them because they don't have an awful lot of time, and they can sit down and read one and get through the story without
easy to breeze through
900 pages. You know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, the interesting thing about writing, being a scribe myself, is that so often your best intention with characters you create may go completely awry because so many times these creations take on a life of their own as you're writing.
So yes, that's
I think
true.
That's probably what happened with you and the female counterpart there.
Yeah, maybe it's due to my inexperience. I've only been writing for about 3 years now, but I don't know. I don't believe in strict outlines, and I let the characters grow and mature, even though Cheryl's now been in two of my novels, the same characters. But there are fascinating things that I find out about them, and I try to present them, their descriptions, and, of course, Travis's wife, on my website, you know, the places, the people, try to help people become familiar with them.
Mm-hmm.
And
give us your website, since we're talking about that. Give us your website and contact information.
Yes, it's www.conspiracynovels.com.
Good. All right.
This and way. If you go there, you can pick up on my latest newsletter. This is my second newsletter. You can also order the books from there, either by going to Amazon or BNN or Books A Million, or you can simply call a 1-800 number. The 1-800 number is a 24/7 live operator who will take the orders right then and there. So the website is really key to people getting familiar with me and my books.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
What brought you to writing? You say you've only been doing it for 3 years. What happened?
Man overboard! What happened?
That's an interesting story. I guess the end of 2008, I was kind of bored and started writing some of my, you know, writing down experiences of my sailing days growing up on San Francisco Bay, places that we used to go, things that we used to do. And I kind of, you know, as I read it back, it was kind of boring. So I thought, you know, there's got to be some fun a person can have with this. You know?
Let's create a tapestry.
I fell into the fictionalization thing, you know, quite by accident. But I started, you know, the villain is a guy like many guys that I knew on the Bay, but he seemed to strike me as someone who could be an interesting villain. And then from there, I developed a plot, you know, and it seemed to, it was, then it became really fun and a lot less boring. And what I could do is, the nice thing about writing in fiction is that you can develop characters and scenery and things like that the way you want them to go.
You can take a license, so to speak. Yes.
Yeah, it's a license that, and it's also, you know, it's like you know, writers never want to preach, but sometimes they can get their message across by talking to the characters. Mm-hmm. I really find that to be very intriguing.
Well, that's one of the things that comes across. Well, I guess first I want to say is, who is Travis? Now, are you really this you know, bawdy, drinking, wild man who doesn't want to work? Or
I think every sea dog's got an element of that in him.
Yeah, kind of an indictment of myself.
There we go.
With Travis. Yeah, I mean, yeah, real indictment. Well, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, he said yeah.
Life. Yeah, right. He better have said yeah. I'd have told him he wasn't a sailor.
The sailing life, kind of, I mean, that's kind of where I was. I'm nearly 64 now. I'm calmed down a lot. I can look back and look at my past experiences, you know, and say, my God, was that really me doing this? especially around St. Augustine. St. Augustine's a very interesting place, and there was a lot of interesting characters, and a lot of it involved, like, a lot of heavy drinking.
I guess because I lived in Central Florida for about 8 years, and I, you know, visited St. Augustine on more than one occasion. Also visited Casadega. Yes, and I was interested in the description around Angel Island because I'm not familiar with San Francisco, so it was an education there. But in the Street Fighter conspiracy, because I was so familiar with it, it was just, oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
Cool.
Yes.
I'm glad to hear that, Audrey. On the Angel Island scene, Angel Island is an island in the middle of the bay. It's bigger than Alcatraz, and it's much more treed and beautiful. It has a mountain on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was originally grabbed by the Army, you know, many, many years ago. But then when the Army became less and less interested in it, the state, California, grabbed a hold of it and turned it into a state park in 1963.
Ah, okay.
And nice. And the thing about all these state parks is that, and it's less true now, but in the 80s again, there was a sunset curfew. And everybody who came over by ferry or by boat or whoever who was hiking around Angel Island had to leave by sunset.
Mm-hmm.
They went around and made sure everybody got off. So here's this, you know, island with uninhabited except for the park rangers, at night, with all these old mysterious Army buildings, where guys could come in, you know, by boat and in the middle of the night and set up just about anything they wanted to, as long as they kept it undercover during the day. And it became, and because it's right there in the middle of San Francisco Bay, there are so many targets for these guys to go after.
Perfect place evil Al Kemp.
Kind of a place I'd want to go get away to. That's my maritime background actually hails from. I was based out of Bahia Mar in Fort Lauderdale, and ended up being a chef on a lot of yachts and schooners based out of there, starting with Lauderdale
really?
Productions, way back in the 70s.
Oh yeah, I lived in Lauderdale, and let me see, early 90s just off Los Olas.
Oh yeah, know it well.
Hendrick's Isle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, enjoy it very much down there.
How long were you there?
Really exciting. Probably about a year, year and a half when I first got married and lived down there. And we also had an apartment up in on the beach in St. Augustine, and we'd kind of commute back and forth, so we had the best of both worlds. But Lauderdale and in the Miami area, what an alive place! I mean, it's just super.
Oh
I love
yeah,
it.
The action never stopped.
That's right.
I was glad I was on a boat to get away from it.
Well, recently, as the story in the second book revolves around them going to the Miami Boat Show and staying at the Cardoza Hotel in South Beach, and I actually went there for a book fair last November and stayed in the Cardoza again. And South Beach is, talk about alive. It's a wonderful place.
No doubt.
Well, I guess as most people think of Florida, they think of coastal Florida, of course, because it's almost all coast.
Yeah, you tend to.
The 8 years I lived in Florida, I lived in Winter Park, which is
a beautiful place.
Smack dab in the middle of the state. Has nowhere.
What I like about the middle of the state is that, and especially in the northern part of the state, is you can see the way Florida used to be.
Yeah.
Many of those little towns in there have just not changed. And
that's
very
true.
Haven't changed. And you see all the modern day activities on the coastlines, whether it's the west or the east coast. But if you go inland and you go to the right places, I mean, you can kind of see the way things used to be. It's kind of a throwback.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I think Florida is a multifaceted environment, and I like all of it.
There seems to be a constant shift of consciousness there, and I don't see how that couldn't be. I guess it's from years past to what's happening now, technology and all that creeping in. But you're right. It's always had this extreme drone of activity.
Well, Winter Park, of course, sits
which
right
is
on
more
top
relaxed.
Of, well, it sits right on top of Orlando.
Right.
I mean, it's Disney
Orlando.
World.
Audrey, did you ever go over to Lake Astor?
No.
Lake Astor, and I can't remember the name of the town. We used to go over there, a pontoon and deck boat magazine do what they call a shootout, and we'd go over there with, when I was working for a manufacturer of that kind of boat, we'd go over there and all the manufacturers would show up, and we hold this thing on Lake Astor, and there's an old town, and I can't remember the name of it, and there's an old hotel way back from the 20s, you know, all built out of wood, and just, it's an amazing place. Trying to remember the name of the hotel, I can't now, but... if you look up Lake Astor, you can find the town and find the hotel, and it's very much worth going to.
Like in the center area of Florida?
Or yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Just about in the geographic center, I'd say.
And the hotel is still active?
I'm sorry?
The hotel is still active?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
I know you described it going back to the 20s a lot, which made me think of the Chalfont Hotel in Cape May, New Jersey, where I did a maritime performance there. And it was built in the 20s, and I think it's just changed hands, and they're modernizing it. But when I was there, it was still all the old wood. It was gorgeous.
Yeah, this place is very much like that. It's the old wooden buildings that go right down to the water. It's beautiful, and it's all been preserved. It's really kind of neat. So that's what I like to do. I like to find interesting areas like that and that I've been to.
You still on a boat these days?
Well, now I'm down to a kayak.
I've got one of those myself. At least that's not a hole in the water you pour money into.
Yeah. Well, the kayak is great because even when I had other boats, Go Sail and Power, I would come home in the evening and slip the kayak into water because it was so easy to use, and then go out and commune with nature, and then come back and just throw it up on the beach and walk away. I mean, the other boats you had to fold sails and wash them down,
flush
the engines and all that stuff.
A lot of work.
You know? And when you think about that, I think there's a real formula that makes people want to use their boats, and I think that formula is the easier it is, the more it comes across your mind. Well, I'll go sailing tonight, or I'll go kayaking. Right. But it has to be something that isn't fraught with all these complications, and then it becomes fun.
Yeah, I remember when I first took my first gig on a yacht as chef on board. Of course, you don't get to do just one thing. My profession is European gourmet chef, and I wanted to use the profession to travel and didn't really know it. I rolled into Fort Lauderdale on a motorcycle and couldn't find a job in a hotel I wanted, so I just rolled up to a dockmaster one day, and I said, do you know anybody here might be looking for a chef? And he said, matter of fact, Sonny, why don't you park your bike, and there's one at the end of the dock. They were just talking about needing a chef, and the deal was I walked on board, and the captain said, well, why don't you cook for captain and crew for the next 3 days? If we like you, we'll keep you. If we don't, we'll pay you and send you on your way. So that's how I fell into it. But it was amazing. What amazed me about the whole thing was how much work it is to be on a boat or a yacht.
Yeah.
The cleaning, the organizing, especially when you're chartering and so on. But people look at it as people have a very romantic image of that lifestyle, and there's a hell of a lot of work attached to it.
There is a lot of work. I had a client, I did a very large maxi boat for which he was unfortunately he was killed in a water accident.
Oh, sorry,
the boat didn't go ahead, but he already had a boat, and he had a captain, he had two stewardesses, a chef, deck crew, and I spent some time on the boat when the owner wasn't there, and it was really, really kickback, and it was really relaxing, and those people were really great. And then I was supposed to meet the owner on the boat in a few days, and suddenly everybody got the realization that the owner was going to show up, and they went nuts. They just already started cleaning, and you know, getting it ready for the owner. The rest of the time, it was kickback time to a certain degree, you know. But when he was going to show up, oh boy.
Yeah, right. And all that sanding and varnishing that goes on, too. And sometimes even before the old varnish is worn off, they're putting on a new layer.
Yeah. Everything has to be pristine. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's right. It's a little showpiece.
Yes. And what is it? The effort put into looking effortless.
Yes. Yes. Takes a lot of work.
And then, of course, where you were down there, you know, Claudio, there's a lot of big boats.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
120 footer was one of the first one I was on was 69 foot, and then it went 120 foot and up.
Oh yeah. It's a great environment. I guess San Francisco has a certain it's a place where I was born and raised and sailed and all that. But I really enjoyed writing again about Florida, and I probably will again. I'm sure that this won't be the end of.
Now explain how it was you became a sailor in the first place. Obviously, you have a background in that, so give us a bit of that.
Well, my dad had, you know, like built small boats when he was little and sailed them on the Oakland Estuary and stuff like that. And then, you know, he kind of, you know, his business took him away from all that. And so when I started to, you know, kind of crawl around and stuff like that, I mean, I guess, you know, he had some of his buddies who were, you know, yacht club members. He didn't have a boat himself at that time. And he just took me down there and try to see what I'd like about the water and boats, and I just, it was like second nature to me.
I just took to it.
I would just like to sail for the rest of my life. I'm so taken with sailing. I fish some, and I've designed power boats, but I always come back to sail.
Yeah, I have to say my passion went toward that as well, despite the fact that I started out on motor yachts. It was the schooners I fell in love with in the long run.
Oh yeah. Yeah, well, as I just try to describe, you know, there's nothing like the, you know, the just the wonderful kinetics of sailing machines. I think it's one machine that man has created that really does him justice with Mother Nature.
It is a work of art that truly complements Mother Nature, I think.
Yes, and boats and their functions and the their design and dealing with wind and water,
mm-hmm.
is just something that just has always fascinated me.
And the characters you meet in that lifestyle.
Oh, well, yes.
There's another story,
the characters,
eh?
And the drunks and everybody that you meet.
Everybody. Some you like and some you'd like to bury out at sea, but yeah.
Yeah, and the whole thing about it is that those characters, I guess, you know, when I started getting into writing again, I mean, the characters are so boundless. I mean, you'd have to be, you know, a complete idiot not to be able to write about all the colorful people that I've known in the world.
Hey,
my God, it's one after another.
Yeah, I know, sitting in bars in St. Thomas, I was chef of Bluebeard's Castle in St. Thomas for a time, and just hanging out in some of those places, I'm convinced the guy buying me drinks, it might have, could have been a hitman, could have been God knows what. Because people literally take refuge in the islands to get away from either the law, former lovers, whatever, but usually it's not that calm. And St. Thomas, every once in a while, would break out with some hideous things going on against tourism or just against somebody getting wet. You know, the street life was a totally different scene. They advertised St. Thomas, for example, as being this great place to go to for tourism. But if you heard it from the natives, they refer to St. Thomas as the rock. It'll break you if you let it. And I can totally see that viewpoint because I lived the street life on it.
Yeah. Well, the characters that I discuss, they have the little marina on the waterway. I mean, they come from real life experiences, and that's the only way, you know, one can write about that, is that you protect them. But there are really people like that.
And, oh yeah,
Florida is fascinating like that, and I had to write the part about Casadega.
Yes, that was so good.
My former girlfriend there was. Very much into Casadega, mm-hmm. and very spiritual and all that stuff, and I think that St. Augustine is quite a spiritual place too. I really believe that more so than just about any place I think I've ever been.
I sort of got that impression, and I think I felt a little bit that way about Winter Park as well. Although Winter Park is a little inundated with wealth, but it seemed to have a more
little understated.
Yes,
yes.
And sometimes that becomes its own philosophy.
My address was Winter Park, but it was right on the edge.
Okay.
I think you're right. I mean, there's all these places. I think that Florida is more imbued with some very interesting places and some very interesting spirituality that doesn't even... I mean, people always look to California, and that's where I'm from. Oh, well, California's this and that, and they're all into that.
They go through fads and trends.
You need to spend a little time in Florida to find out what's really going on.
Yeah, right.
I think they're way ahead of the scheme there on all that stuff.
I agree with that.
Well, I think one of the interesting things about both the novels is, as you're telling this, really, I mean, they're adventure novels, but then something else will come in, they're almost like bits of philosophy here and there. And I'm thinking particularly in the Casadega incident, where he's being told how he attracts evil. And then you go off a little bit on some description of this human relationship with forces outside of themselves. And it was very interesting. I mean, you do that in a number of spaces or places throughout the both books.
Well, thank you. It's a chance, like I say, for... are you still there? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Okay. The cell phone. But those opportunities, you know, are... are there as long as you don't take a preachy opportunity. I mean, Conrad did it so well. I mean, he was a seafarer, and he got his shots in on human nature. And every time I read Conrad, I know how badly I write.
Oh, dear.
He was just so good. And he was Polish.
That's a strong one to measure up to.
It was his second language, and he was brilliant. And he was a brilliant philosopher without being preachy. And, yeah, I mean, I'm fascinated with why people do the things they do, and there's these forces inside of us that make us do things. I mean, good and evil is one way to call it. I mean, I often just pick up Genesis or certain Old Testament things and read them again, because I'm so fascinated with the topic. I'm fascinated with the human condition,
mm-hmm.
and I think a lot of it is pushes and pulls us, and it's hard to say, you know, whether these are outside forces. I think they're inside forces. I think we have the power to be both. I mean, we have the power to be a Hitler. We have the power to be a Mahatma Gandhi. These things all exist inside of us, and I'm terribly fascinated by it, obviously.
It's never as simple as good and evil, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. It's so basic and such a wonderful topic that I never get tired of writing about it.
Mm-hmm.
You're making me think of Conrad's Heart of Darkness.
Yes, yes, and Kurtz and all those guys. And then I've been reading Tales of Hearsay, which is some of his short stories, which are great. He was a great short story writer. Of course, Heart of Darkness was a long short story. It was never a novel. But it was just so... I've been in love with the Conrad style for a long time. He's just so to the point. And he always wraps... What's neat about him is he always wraps his message around a fascinating story. So it's a point of history, or it's a point of a voyage that he went on, or people that he met while he was at sea or mm-hmm. in a certain port. And then these people did certain things, and of course then the good and evil comes in, and you know, and things like that, and how people are. And he's a master of that. I guess I talk a lot about Conrad, but I also like the screenwriters. I really think that people like Billy Wilder they are so imaginative, and they are so able to do exactly that same thing, pinpoint the foibles of human nature, do it and make you laugh at it, and not be preachy. John Huston is another one. He's a little preachy. But,
Francis Ford Coppola, to throw
in
the mix.
Coppola and Kasdan, who wrote Body Heat, which is mm-hmm. just a fantastic story.
Yes.
There are just so many really good movies. I guess I've resisted doing the supernatural. You know, Travis and Carol don't fly through the air.
Yes,
they're just normal people normal situations. They don't have any magical powers, you know.
Right,
and I think that's the way I'm going to keep it. I think I'll keep the that kind of thing to the computer imagers.
Well, do us a favor. Give us just for the audience's sake, give us a quick synopsis of both novels, if you don't mind.
Oh, okay.
You don't have to give away the...
You don't have to give anything away. Right. Just give a taste.
A teaser.
All right. Well, the Angel Island conspiracy involves some people who discover that there are places in the San Francisco Bay Area where they can go, where no one will know except somebody who's on the water and can see what's happening in just about every place in the Bay Area. So when they discover that these things are going on, it's hard for the rest of the Bay Area and the authorities to really believe that this thing can be so simple and yet so devastating to a major Bay Area landmark. And they spend time fighting the bad guys and meeting all kinds of interesting people in the process and going interesting places on the Bay. And eventually it comes to a climax. I can't say really what.
Right.
Exactly.
Moving on to the Street Fighter conspiracy, I designed a boat for the Navy called Street Fighter. There was a concept. It's not my concept. The name is not my concept, although the design was. The Naval War College came up with a concept for a way for the Navy to create small ships that can go into really tight choke points around the world where destroyers and cruisers would be at a disadvantage, especially if they were attacked by smaller boats. And that never really went anywhere, although the Navy's still interested in doing Street Fighter. It's a marvelous idea. They're cheap to build, and they would be great for all, you know, an anti-terrorist tool. And they're just wonderful. So the second book is about, well, it's a lot about Travis, you know, and St. Augustine and all the characters, in the Marine world down there. But it's also laced with this client who comes to him, a secret client, who wants to design a very special boat and a yacht. And what happens is it turns out not to be a yacht. It turns out to be a tool of terrorism. And how that happens and what Travis and Carol do to try to stop this boat being built. It's built in secret. He takes him a year and a half to find out where the boat is. And then he goes there and confronts the villains.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The story takes off from there. So I hope that's somewhat
that's good.
A good synopsis.
Just want to remind the folks, you're listening to Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater. We have Robert Banks Hull, the author of Street Fighter Conspiracy, as well as the Angel Island Conspiracy, two novels or novellas that we're talking about today here at the Speakeasy. And, of course, my co-host Audrey is here as well. And we're just going on about all things maritime at this point. Now, you said, Robert, that you were calling from a naval base?
Yes, it's the Navy amphibious base in Virginia Beach at Little Creek, mm-hmm. And there is going on here right now a show in which the civilian boat builders come in and civilian suppliers of everything from propulsion engines to navigation systems get a chance to talk with the Navy about the direction of small military boat design, and it gives everybody a chance to kind of schmooze. There's quite a few military people here.
Uh-huh.
And there are quite a few of my friends who, due to the economy, have kind of attached themselves to doing small military contracts. And the Navy, like the Street Fighter, the Navy is very interested in special operations forces, boats and vehicles, small vehicles that they can use for insertion and so on into choke points and trouble
right.
spots around the world, and you know, automated boats, unmanned boats, just patrol boats, all things under the sun like that, and it's a very interesting show. I'm going to try to catch some of the conferences now, or some of the lectures, and you know, it's weird. I used to go to lectures and want to know, you know, talk to people about stability and structure, and now I want to talk to people about military philosophy.
Well,
I want to know how these guys think so I can write about them.
Well, I'm sure you've got a good sense of it by now.
Yeah, well, you get a good sense. When I designed the version that Northrop Grumman presented for Street Fighter, I got to be privy to a lot of the military things.
I could see
before
that.
I got my clearance. I was allowed to design the boat, but I was not allowed to sit in on the conferences for certain weapon systems that the boat was going to carry.
Ah.
I didn't have a high enough clearance, so I would actually have to leave the room.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all very interesting. I think we're involved in a real struggle right now. As of course, everybody knows that's almost cliche to say, but it's the struggle with ourselves as much as it's a struggle with forces we have not had to deal with before, and they're testing our system and they're testing our way of life. And
I think that brings up the question that I had from reading these books and based on your, you know, in considerable experience, how vulnerable are we to coastal nautical terrorism?
Well,
in your perception, wondering what you'd say.
I mean, just my first book and the target of the first book, it's a very real thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we, how much can we go, how much can we protect things? I mean, what do we do? We set up an army base around Mount Rushmore or the Golden Gate Bridge. I mean, what do we do?
Mm-hmm.
And still maintain our freedom and still be able to enjoy the beauties of our environment, both man-made and natural. And that's where the dichotomy comes in. But it's a real threat because, gosh, it was so easy for those guys to get into those airplanes. 9/11. Mm-hmm. It was so easy, and it bowled us over. I guess one of the things that we're still being bowled over by is how these guys are so bold, they can do these things that we can't even imagine anybody would really want to do. I mean, I think that going back to Pearl Harbor was very much like that. I mean, we just
very similar.
Somebody was going to do this to us and come all the way across the ocean. Yeah, 2,500 miles.
At the same point, on more of a political eye, we've also got to remember that our own sentinels left the gate open.
That's right, and I talked to that. They did, and. Well,
there's a whole lot to chew off there, but it's more than one element there.
Yeah, and Claudio, one of the things I've been approached, and I probably will end up doing an interview, is for one of these kind of conservative talk show hosts.
Mm-hmm. Oops.
You're
going to have a wrestling match there, brother.
Everybody has politics, and I respect everybody's politics, but. I'm a writer. I want to write about the human condition. I don't want to write about politics.
I try to steer clear. I don't like either side.
I think that the human condition without politics is fascinating enough. without dipping into that.
Right. No need to go there. I just thought I'd throw that in.
So what's your next book?
Well, we're vulnerable, but not in, it's funny. I mentioned in how we set up Nike sites along the coast of California, which we did in the 50s to try to circumvent an attack. And those Nikes were all, soon they were brought to be obsolete because it was thought that after a while, the Nikes won't do any good. The only way to counter an attack by ICBMs is by launching your own attack by ICBMs and slugging it out Dr. Strangelove style, the doomsday machine.
Yes, here we come.
It freezes us in our tracks,
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot to think about, but I want to go on. I mean, I think that the thing is that, and I found a vehicle, thank God. I mean, I found it quite by accident, but I found a vehicle, fiction writing and storytelling, mm-hmm. that I really like, and it enables me to put a message across without getting up on a soapbox and without being.
I kind of suspected that.
I want to say one thing that I want to say something that I particularly appreciate about your work here, and I know Audrey feels the same way, and that because I have not seen this done, on the very back of it, you have nautical and sailing terms, so I'm going to use that as my little lexicon.
Well, thank you. Try to put some things together. When I first did the first book, The Angel Island Conspiracy, it was really, it was too sailing-ish, mm-hmm. And my editor said, you want to sell this book to somebody else besides the guy who has a boat sitting in a dock in Sausalito, California? You want to sell this to them? Get rid of a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I did. But it's kind of like, Dick Francis writes a lot about horse races.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I mean, he's written tons about, and there's murders and intrigue and everything else, and they take part, they take place in a horse racing that kind of venue.
That world.
My venue is being out on the water and sailing, and it's a great venue because there's so much to write about, and I try to make sure that I write about interesting places that we've all been. Whether we're sailors or not,
right?
You make a trip to San Francisco, or you go to St. Augustine. The Prince of Lions and St. Augustine, or gee whiz, yeah, I've seen that. I've been to Sausalito. Yeah, I know where that is. And it kind of generates an interest, and then it just so happens that the action takes place on boats. And I have to do that to make it real because that's my only real point of reference.
And just to give a little emphasis to your nautical terms, I remember one of my biggest frustrations years ago when I first went to sea, and God knows it's become a way of life with me since then, but the biggest frustration I had was the captain and crew using these blooming nautical terms around me and me not knowing what the heck they were talking about. I'd go, would somebody please speak English until I understand this language?
Yeah, and what I've tried to do is where I have to use a nautical term, I will, but I try to, make it as little as possible, and when somebody's raising sails and getting ready to go sailing, I mean, it's just raising the sails and then seeing the wind.
There's nothing wrong with educating the reader in that regard.
No, I found that delightful because I'm not a sailor. As much as I enjoy sitting on the beach and looking at the ocean.
Won't go on the boat, but it'll admire it from the distance.
So that was a lot of help there.
Yeah, it's just that I think everybody can have an affinity with wind and water,
mm-hmm.
whether you understand sailing or not. And that's kind of what I'm trying to bring, is the kind of love of wind and water
right.
that I get out of sailing is something that everybody, they don't have to be a sailor to enjoy
mm-hmm.
that. I mean, you know, just to get out once in a while from your stuffy office and get up from
Absolutely.
Your computer and step out and feel the sun and the wind in your face.
Right.
You know, my goodness, this is living. What am I doing?
There's absolutely nothing like sea air. I just don't like being out on top of it, out in the middle of it all.
The only thing that comes close on land, the only thing that comes close on land is being a biker, which is what I was until I hit the sails.
you can take things to extremes. I mean, there are times when you're stuck out there, and there's, you know, I used to deliver boats when I was in Florida as well, when the design business was a little slack. My girlfriend and I, we were both licensed captains, so we'd deliver boats for the snowbirds back and forth up the coast.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times you get stuck out there, and I mean, you know, you're just too far from anything, and you just have to slug it out.
Right.
And I mean, that's not fun.
Right.
You know, you just can't pull into the dock, and then 5 minutes later, you're dry, you're taking a shower and everything. You're out there miserably for hours and hours getting kicked around by Mother Nature.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are all, every side you can think of. When it comes to Mother Ocean.
Give us an idea of where we're going. Where are you going to take us next? We've been to San Francisco. We've been down to St. Augustine.
Yeah.
What's next?
There's
or do
a
you
place.
Know yet?
Yeah, I know. I've got one started.
Oh, good.
Uh-huh.
Good.
It's this one. I'd like to go back to Florida, and I will, I think, eventually. This one is developing around a mysterious place along the Pacific coast, which is not accessible, and I don't want to let you know.
No,
I guess,
okay.
I understand.
But it is a place where there are no roads. There's no way to get there. There's no way for anybody to even drive by the cliffside and see what's going on.
Parachute in.
it goes back to my days in the Coast Guard years ago. When we had patrols up and down the West Coast to try to ward off the Russian fishing trawlers from getting inside of our 12-mile limit, and their rigging was all GAD radars, and they were anything but fishing trawlers, in other words. And
mm-hmm.
we chased them all around in the fog and outside the fog and in all kinds of weather, and I just think there's a real story of intrigue in there.
So you spent time in the Coast Guard?
Yeah, I was...
Uh-huh.
I was in the Coast Guard in the 60s. I was a 2-year reserve so I could get my GI Bill and go back to school.
Uh-huh.
And so I did 2 years active, and I was a boat driver because that's what I've been, you know, I'd grown
right.
up. So as soon as they found out about that, then actually I was stationed for a good deal of my tour, my active duty, at a little Coast Guard station near the Golden Gate Bridge called Fort Point in the Presidio, San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
And,
oh, yes.
One of our jobs was picking up jumpers from the Golden Gate Bridge.
So, oh, dear.
Yeah.
I watched a documentary on that not long ago. Whew.
and then getting around the Bay Area at night, we had to go out and look for, you know, guys that hadn't shown up. I think I read a little bit about that in one of the books. And, you know, you'd spend all night, you know, going from yacht harbor to yacht harbor looking for this guy. You know? And then you finally go to the yacht harbor where somebody finally told you that his boat was supposedly out of.
Mm-hmm.
And you find his boat sitting at the yacht harbor. Hadn't been anywhere. He told his wife he was going out fishing, and he didn't go fishing.
Oh,
and we would spend hours looking for this clown. And he was,
oh, for heaven's sake.
He was never out in his boat in the first place. But it really gave me kind of an interesting, you know, side of going around San Francisco Bay and at night and just seeing all the places that were very intriguing and places where intrigues can take place. That's really fascinating.
Fantastic. We just want to remind the folks listening that we are talking about the Street Fighter Conspiracy as well as the Angel Island Conspiracy, both books written by Robert Banks Hull, who's on the phone with us right now. And actually, we're getting ready to bring this to a wrap. So, Robert, I want to thank you for filling us in on this and keep us tuned in to stuff in the future. Give us your contact information one more time.
Okay. My website is www. conspiracynovels.com. So that's www.conspiracynovels.com. And there you can order my books, you can read my newsletters, you can read about the characters and read a synopsis of each book. And it's where I'll be talking about the next books that I'm doing and how the characters will develop in there. So it's really kind of a good place to go to learn more about me and my writings.
That's great. And I had a lot of fun reading the books and look forward to where you're going to take us next. As I said, had told Claudio that it's like a travelogue in a lot of ways.
Easy to breeze through, that's
yes,
for sure.
Yes, yes. So,
and when you go more into your Joseph Conrad phase, you can really let me know, because I love the classics. I'm a big.
Goodness. If I could ever write like him, I'd fall over backwards. But
keep practicing. Yeah, keep practicing. That's all it takes.
I will. I keep practicing. You know, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Audrey, I really, that's an interesting point about the travelogue, and mm-hmm. that's why I love to talk to people about reading the books, because they give me insights. Mm-hmm. Into my writing, good and bad. You know, well, uh-huh. you did this. That didn't make any sense. Why'd you do that? And then, you know, I think travelogues are good, and especially when they're when they have a fictional setting and a plot.
Mm-hmm.
Sate certain curiosities. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Robert, thank you for joining us and entertaining us for the hour. And consider yourself part of the Speakeasy family at this point, and we'll just continue to get updates from you as time goes by.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you, Claudio. I appreciate the opportunity. And you too, Audrey. It's been great talking to both
of you.
Okay. Good having you on.
Bye-bye.
See you. Bye-bye.
And that was Robert Banks Hull calling us from, well, it was Florida, wasn't it?
He was calling from Virginia.
Virginia, that's right. I got it all back. I'm remembering too much about the books.
Well, you know, we're talking about travelogues, and we couldn't figure out at first where he was going to be calling in from.
My mind was in these geographical regions.
Thought it was Texas, and it turns out that's where he lives, but he's now in Virginia Beach. So,
Virginia. Working on some more.
Yes.
And I think that about wraps up our hour.
Uh-huh.
Thanks for joining us, folks out there. The usual.
And come back next week.
We're going to be interviewing Jen Chapin by telephone, mm-hmm. the daughter of Harry Chapin, Cats in the Cradle and the Silver Spoon. That was her dad. So tune us in next week. You keep us tuned in, and we'll keep you turned on. This is Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater on WCOM 103.5 FM, signing off. Cheers.